Motherhood has been used to oppress and exploit women for centuries, but it doesn't have to be this way, and as mothers, we're ready for a revolution. We love our kids, but we struggle with losing our identities, bearing the weight of motherhood without enough support, and striving to meet those impossible standards of what it means to be a good mother. It's time to openly discuss how motherhood is deeply affected by patriarchy, racism, and capitalism, so that we can break free of these systems. As mothers, we know our work is valuable and has radical potential to birth a more equitable and inclusive future for ourselves and our children. Welcome to the Rebel Mothers Podcast. I'm your host, Susie Fischleiter, and together we'll explore the challenges of modern motherhood and reclaim mothering as an act of liberation. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rebel Mothers Podcast. So real quick, before I get into today's episode, I do have a little announcement. This is my last full episode that I'm going to release before I take a break for summer. I am going to put out another episode next week, giving an update of what I'll be working on over the summer. I've got a new project I'm diving into that I'm really excited about. But also, my kids are out of school in 3 weeks, and anyone who has kids in school knows what a freaking cluster the last month is. Right? I've got one kid graduating middle school and another kid graduating elementary school, and apparently these all get parties now on different days. Plus there's the usual teacher gifts and school spirit days and end of year projects that require last minute runs to Target. They've all got field trips coming up. There's just so much going on. So I'm going to pause on releasing an episode every week during summer break, and we're going to talk more about that next week. But today, let's talk about raising boys while living in a patriarchal society. So obviously, I've brought up the patriarchy before, but today we're going to talk a little bit more deeply about the system and specifically its impact on men and boys and what this means for people who are raising sons. So in this episode, we're going to explore the origins of patriarchy, or, you know, talk about it a little bit. We're going to debunk some common myths and arguments against the patriarchal system and discuss how it not only affects women, but also men and a society as a whole. And I remember a few years ago, I was browsing the toy aisle in Target, and I overheard these two young women talking, and one said to the other, "So, you know, what did you buy him for his first birthday?" And her friend replied, "Oh, we got him a baby doll. You know, I really just wanted to defy those gender stereotypes that say boys don't play with dolls." And I smiled, you know, because I love hearing that kind of stuff, but also because I remembered when I bought my own baby boy a baby doll with the same intention, right? Defying gender stereotypes. And I'll tell you later in this episode how that worked out. But, you know, as mothers, as caregivers, and as allies, we have a responsibility to raise boys who challenge these patriarchal norms and who are working toward a more equitable future. But we also know that patriarchy harms men as well as women. So we have a responsibility to protect boys as well. So how do we balance all this? Is it really just as simple as buying them baby dolls to nurture? Spoiler alert, it's not. So let's go ahead and start the conversation. Where did the patriarchy come from? We cannot have a conversation about how boys are raised without talking about the patriarchy. And just a reminder on what I mean when I'm saying the patriarchy. It is a social system that prioritizes men's dominance and control over women. It perpetuates gender inequality and reinforces power imbalances based on gender. For a long time, patriarchal beliefs were really conscious, deliberate, right? And often centered on the notion that men were inherently superior to women. And this was ordained by divine authority, right? That men were to hold positions of power and control in society, while women were relegated to subordinate roles that were deemed suitable for their supposed inferior intellect and capabilities. Nowadays, this is more of an unconscious thing, right? Very few people today are walking around going, "Oh yeah, men are definitely smarter and better than women." But the reality is, this system, this unconscious belief system that has perpetuated over thousands of years, has resulted in an unequal distribution of more power to men than women. We see this everywhere. Personal relationships, work life, spirituality, politics, educational systems, it's everywhere. It infiltrates all aspects of our lives. After we saw the Barbie movie last summer, my teenage son asked me when patriarchy started. Like, when did it start? And of course, there isn't one simple answer, right? There's no one point in history or geographical location where one day we lived in gender equality and then the next day men were all dominating women. There are many theories on how the patriarchy evolved, right? Like asking, has it always been this way? Is men's domination over women simply natural to the human species and it's always going to be this way? And I have to admit, in my darker moments, sometimes it can feel like overwhelming and insurmountable. When you look at the history and see that even how far we've come, seeing how far we still have to go, that can be pretty discouraging. There was a great book that was published last year, Angela Saini's, I don't know how to say her last name, Saini, S-A-I-N-I. The book is The Patriarchs, The Origins of Inequality. And this book drew on anthropology, archaeology, sociology, and she really went deep to explore the historical roots of gender inequality. And she challenges the notion that male dominance is inherent, or, you know, biologically determined or divinely ordained. And instead, she really highlights how social constructs have perpetuated and reinforced gender disparities over millennia. And this book really debunks a lot of myths and misconceptions surrounding gender roles and like innate abilities. She dismantles all the arguments that try to justify gender equality with claims of like men's biological superiority or women's inferiority. And instead, she really emphasizes the role that society plays in shaping these gender norms. Here's a quote. Quote, if we are to understand how humans came to dominate the planet, it's worth asking why we continue to portray ourselves as biological creatures rather than social ones. End quote. She really challenges readers to question this idea of biological determinism and, you know, recognize the social construction of gender roles and power dynamics so that we can start to reconsider some commonly held assumptions about human behavior and capabilities. Basically, what she says in the book, patriarchy evolved in different ways, in different places, at different times, but not everywhere, and it wasn't inevitable. And in the afterword, she writes, quote, some will claim that oppression is permanently woven into who we are. They will say that humans are inherently selfish and violent, that entire categories of people are naturally dominant or subordinate. I have to ask, would we still manage to care about each other so much if that were true? End quote. So we don't really know where patriarchy came from, but it evolved over a long time, and it's here. Now, of course, whenever I throw around words like patriarchy and feminism, I'm reminded that not everyone has the same definitions that I do, that some people deny that these ideologies exist, and some actually blame women and feminism for everything that's wrong with the world today, which, ironically, is a very patriarchal thing to do. So let's address some of the common arguments against the patriarchy. Also, y'all, when I was researching this episode, I read and listened to quite a few articles and videos that ranged from mildly annoying and mind-numbing to outright terrifying in their hostility towards women. So I bring these arguments against patriarchy to you so that you don't have to do that. You're welcome. There are some truly hideous things out there on the internet. But today, let's talk about argument number one. The patriarchy doesn't exist. Some people argue that patriarchy actually doesn't even exist. It's a myth, or it's an outdated concept. Like they claim that modern society has moved on, right? And we are now gender equal. Men and women have equal opportunities. So they might point to like legal rights and protections for women that exist now as evidence that patriarchy no longer exists. And they're conveniently overlooking many systematic inequalities and social norms that still favor men in many spheres of life. Sometimes they pull out the awful statistics about how men commit more suicide or they live shorter lives as an example, right? Like if patriarchy existed, then surely men wouldn't be suffering at all, right? And we will get into how patriarchy harms men in a minute. So this argument doesn't hold any water for me. It's not that men are suffering because patriarchy doesn't exist. Men are suffering in part because patriarchy does exist. Okay, argument number two. Feminism is actually the problem. So critics of feminism often argue that feminist movements have gone too far and women are trying to undermine or reverse traditional gender roles. And this is leading to societal instability and confusion. right? They argue that feminism has led to the marginalization of men, portrays men as inherently oppressive and responsible for all gender-related issues. And some critics will also claim that feminism ignores men's issues, like the higher rates of suicide, workplace fatalities, and higher rates of incarceration. Feminism as the problem is also where we get the incels, short for involuntary celibates, which are groups of mostly young men who blame the fact that they aren't getting laid on feminists. They believe that men are the true victims of gender oppression, that male power has been usurped, and that feminism is a front to disguise men's subjugation. The whole incel culture portrays women as irrational and emotional creatures who are blindly pursuing the biological imperatives to seek sexual satisfaction and material security through marriage. So they blame women for the problems on everything. Great. Okay, argument number three. The problem, quote unquote problem, isn't actually patriarchy. It's something else. So some people might agree that there is gender disparity, but they'll blame something else besides an ideology of patriarchy. For example, they might argue that economic factors rather than patriarchal beliefs are the primary drivers of gender disparity. Then they might point to women's increasing participation in the workforce and economic gains as evidence that gender inequality is diminishing naturally over time. So like we just need to address the economic dimension and then women will be equal, right? Or they go the biological route and say that women are inherently weaker, and since women are more nurturing and better with children, we should be in the home while men should be out in the world making decisions. So patriarchy isn't actually a problem. This is just the way the world works. That kind of links up with number one, that like it doesn't exist, or it does exist, but it's not actually a problem at all. It's the way it's supposed to be. This last idea that I run into frequently is argument for cultural relativism, which is really hard for me to say, relativism, blah. So cultural relativism is the idea that cultural beliefs and values and practices should be understood and judged within the context of their own culture without imposing external standards or judgments. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not saying, like, that's true, right? So critics of feminism or defenders of patriarchy will use this to argue that gender norms and power structures vary across cultures and historical contexts, and suggesting that what might be perceived as patriarchy in one society is not necessarily applicable universally. They might argue that imposing Western feminist ideals on other culture is ethnocentric and ignores diverse perspectives on gender and power. And this is not to say that this argument is wrong, right? We learned earlier that gender inequality and oppression has not been the same for everyone, everywhere. But just because cultures have different ways of approaching gender, that does not mean that patriarchy doesn't exist. So patriarchy might manifest itself in different forms, and we do need to be cautious of imposing our, perhaps Eurocentric, colonizer values on different cultures and say and deciding what is patriarchy and what isn't. That's a more nuanced conversation to have, but it's there. We should keep it in mind. That's a more sophisticated argument against patriarchy than some of the other ones. So overall, these arguments against the patriarchy and against feminism, they all usually overlook systemic inequalities, and they all fail to address that there are ongoing struggles for gender equity faced by many individuals around the world. Most people who identify as feminists today hold the belief that feminism as an ideology is not just about gender, it's also about ending all forms of oppression, racism, ableism, classism, and so on. So, the book, The Origins of the Patriarchs, it offers insights into how patriarchy intersects with these other forms of oppression. And the author emphasizes the interconnectedness of all of these systems of power and the need for an intersectional approach in addressing inequality. Okay, so now that we've talked about some of the arguments against patriarchy, hopefully we can accept that it exists and that feminism is not about bashing or like tearing down men or trying to make women to be like men or putting women in control over men. It's actually just about making sure everyone has equal status and equal access to resources and power and things like that. So, because here's the thing, right? Under patriarchy, everyone is suffering. So that's, despite this misconception that, you know, the patriarchy is just benefiting men, it harms men in many different ways. So like just some of these statistics, men are more likely to smoke cigarettes, abuse alcohol, engage in high-risk behavior, and have more accidents at work. They're less likely to go to the doctor. And I just read in a recent article that 80% of drowning victims are male. Even though their swimming skills are equivalent to women, it's just they're less likely to wear life jackets. They're more likely to overestimate their swimming abilities, and they're more likely to take risks. Men also make up 50% of the population, but in 2021, they were nearly 80% of suicides. And a lot of these behaviors can be traced back to patriarchal beliefs. So let's look at a few of the ways in which the patriarchy negatively impacts men. First, emotional repression. You know, patriarchal norms really dictate that men should suppress emotions like vulnerability or sadness or fear, and it reinforces the idea that expressing these feelings is a sign of weakness. So this emotional repression can lead to mental health issues like depression or anxiety or isolation, and men are really discouraged from even seeking support or discussing their feelings openly. This is where you get, you know, boys don't cry, knock that off kind of mentality. Another way, toxic masculinity. So masculinity is not inherently bad in any way, but toxic masculinity, which it emphasizes the traits that are toxic, like dominance, aggression, anger, things like that, while denigrating qualities like empathy, compassion, and sensitivity. So men who conform to these rigid gender norms might engage in harmful behaviors like aggression and violence and risk-taking to prove their masculinity, leading to negative consequences for themselves and others. When like a guy is truly ill and says, oh, I don't need to go to the doctor, that's toxic masculinity coming out. Like there's this sense they need to prove their masculinity in some way. Another way is a limited expression of identity. So these patriarchal norms kind of constrain men's abilities to express their identity fully because they're expected to adhere to narrow standards of masculinity, right? And under patriarchy, you know, girls and women and their sort of traits are seen as second rate. So a man acting in a way that's considered, quote, feminine is basically seen as consciously dropping a rung on society's ladder. This limits men's freedom to explore their diverse interests and emotions and ways of being. This is why you see a lot more hatred and anger for transgender men who are transitioning to women, as opposed to women transitioning to men. Because under patriarchy, it's like, well, it makes sense. Of course a woman would want to be a man, but a man becoming a woman is violating this patriarchal norm. Julia Serrano's excellent book, Whipping Girl, talks about this trans misogyny. Limited expression of identity. And it doesn't have to be transgender, obviously. Like, you know, just men expressing themselves creatively or, you know, hopefully that makes sense. Okay, another way, unrealistic expectations. Patriarchal societies will often place unrealistic expectations on men to fulfill traditional roles as the breadwinner, the protector, the provider, regardless of their individual circumstances or desires. So I find a parallel in this in everything I'm talking about with like that perfect mother myth, that idealization of motherhood. Men have this too, right? This expectation that a man can provide for their family, that he can protect their family, that places a lot of pressure, and this pressure to conform can lead to stress, anxiety, or feelings of inadequacy for men who, for whatever reason, struggle to meet these sometimes impossible standards. And finally, a limited role in caregiving. This obviously hurts men and women because patriarchal structures really devalue caregiving, right? And domestic responsibilities. We've talked about this ad nauseum, like the undervaluing of domestic labor, relegating them primarily to women. So as a result, men may face stigma and discrimination when they do want to participate fully in caregiving roles. just, you know, whether they maybe they want to be a stay-at-home parent or take parental leave. I have a friend of mine who is offered parental leave as part of his job. Like, it's part of their contract, but culturally, none of the men who work there have ever taken advantage of it. So it's like this amazing benefit that's offered to them. There's this like stigma against taking a caregiving role. It's the patriarchy. So, you know, this is harmful for everybody because children really benefit from, you know, being in a nurtured and caregiving role from a man. And yeah, so those are some of the ways that patriarchy harms men by perpetuating harmful gender norms, restricting their emotional expression and personal identity, and imposing unrealistic expectations. All of this can lead to stress, anxiety, and emotional distress. And if you want to read more about how patriarchy harms men, I highly recommend Liz Plank's excellent book, For the Love of Men. She shows how these patriarchal expectations limit men's, you know, emotional expression, and it hinders their ability to form authentic connections, and explores the damaging effects of toxic masculinity on men's relationships and personal development. It's a great book. I love this quote from it. Quote, "We need to create a world where men feel free to be themselves, not just the men they think they're supposed to be." End quote. Okay, so all of this is in my head when I think about raising my boys. And now we get to the heart of this episode. How the hell are you supposed to raise boys in a patriarchy? How do I make sure that my sons aren't harmed by these patriarchal norms? But then how do I raise them to be proactively feminist themselves, using their privileges as white men to dismantle these systems that are harmful to everyone? Well, I have a few thoughts, you know, each of which is worthy of a lengthy discussion on its own, but I'm just going to kind of give an overview idea here. And then at the end, I'm going to ask you to share your ideas with me. I would love to hear from you because I don't have all the answers. All right, so here's an idea. Number one, model healthy communication and equal gender roles in the home. So demonstrate respectful and open communication in your own relationships and interactions. Show your sons how to express themselves assertively as an ally, but also while listening actively and empathetically to others. And every family structure looks different, but if we're looking at the sort of, you know, stereotypical nuclear family with a father and a mother, there should be an intentional and conscious conversation about who will engage in what kind of work so that it's divided up equally. That means dad should be cooking, cleaning, filling out school forms, packing lunches, folding laundry, comforting boo-boos, managing after-school activity schedules just as much as mom, right? And if you're in a family situation where one parent works outside the home to earn an income and the other parent stays home to take care of the children and housework, this conversation is even more critical because it's all too easy for the stay-at-home parent, which is usually the mother, because remember, under patriarchy, women earn less money than men. It's all too easy for them to become the doer of all things, and then this care worker is taken for granted. And that's not to say that a conscious and intentional conversation might not result in that, right? In your relationship, you might come to the conclusion that it makes more sense for one parent to take on more of the caregiving roles while another parent works outside of the home to earn a higher income. But that's got to be something that's talked about and worked out in the family, right? And if the income-earning parent gets to come home from work and relax in the evenings and weekends, then the stay-at-home parent should be relaxing just as much because care work is also work that we need a break from sometimes. Number two, move beyond the dolls to actively promote feminine values. Yes, I gave both my sons a baby doll. Well, I gave the first a baby doll and he never played with it. So then baby doll got passed down to my second son and he never played with it. And in fact, this poor baby doll lay neglected in the closet until my daughter was born. And at the age of two, she uncovered this little baby and promptly took him into her room to care for him. So it goes beyond buying dolls for boys and you know, traditional girl dolls type thing. You know, I want us to think about this idea. We tell our daughters they can do anything a boy can do, but do we tell our sons they can do anything a girl can do? So encourage your sons to question traditional gender roles and expectations. Help them understand that masculinity is diverse and multifaceted. There's no one right way to be a man. And also elevate traditionally feminine characteristics, femininity. Because under patriarchy, femininity is not valued as masculinity. And I know we're getting into a lot of binaries here, and I don't want to get hung up on that because we can all agree that there are characteristics that are quote unquote feminine or masculine. But all humans are capable of compassion, creativity, nurturance, warmth, vulnerability, generosity, fear, sadness, and so on. And some of these characteristics and emotions and feelings, men have been told that they shouldn't act that way. And there's this really disturbing belief that I found in my research among the kind of far right that masculinity is under attack, that boys are being coddled, and teaching them compassion is actually emasculating them. So, yeah, we want boys and men to be able to feel their feelings, all feelings, and recognize that humans are capable, all humans are capable of the full range of human expression. Okay, which brings me to number three, address your own unconscious patriarchal beliefs. So it takes practice encouraging boys to be vulnerable, compassionate, and creative. And it also starts with checking your own unconscious biases about men and femininity. How do you feel about men crying in front of you? What's your gut reaction if I told you to picture a man braiding another man's hair? What would you think if your male coworker proudly showed you the quilt he just finished making? Recognizing how the patriarchy has affected our own beliefs about how men are supposed to behave is a good place to start, because it's all very well and good to say, of course men should be compassionate and creative. But once we're aware, oh wait, I actually maybe unconsciously don't feel uncomfortable about something like that, right? We can start to unpack why we think like this. We can question, do these thoughts still serve us? And then we can consciously go about changing our belief system around men and feminine values if needed. Okay, number four, encourage emotional intelligence. So in addition to never again saying the phrase, boys don't cry, it's crucial to actively promote emotional intelligence and empathy in boys. This is one of the most radical things we can do, I think. Having open discussions about feelings, validating boys' emotions, and providing them with healthy outlets for expression. Teach them to recognize and respect emotions in themselves and in others, and that's going to foster the sense of compassion and understanding that, you know, transcends traditional gender roles. Number five, address all forms of oppression, not just gender inequality. And this is a big one. Patriarchy does not exist in a vacuum, and women are not the only class of people who face injustice and oppression. We live in a society of interlocking oppressions, namely white supremacy, heteronormativity, extractive capitalism, imperialism, ableism, just to name a few. So intersectionality means that there are people who are facing multiple injustices based on their various identities. And raising feminist sons means raising boys who are aware of these systems and are actively working to dismantle them. Number six, foster critical media literacy. So it's helpful to learn how to equip boys with the skills to critically analyze and deconstruct media messages about gender, because you won't be there all the time, right? When they're watching TV or hearing, you know, being shared memes with friends, things like that. So it's good to watch movies and shows that are diverse and inclusive, but it's also important to teach them how to question stereotypes and representations of masculinity and femininity in movies and ads and social media, right? So go back and watch some of your favorite movies from like the 90s and the early 2000s with your kids and point out all the stuff that just would not fly today. And maybe, you know, maybe even reflect on how that affected you too. Okay, number seven, promote consent and respectful relationships. So from the very beginning, teach your kids about the importance of consent, boundaries, and respect in all relationships, whether it's romantic, platonic, or family. Everyone has the right to bodily autonomy, meaning they have control, or they should have control over what happens to their body, including who gets to touch it, how, when, etc. If they don't want to be hugged by Aunt Sarah, they don't have to be hugged. Then you teach them that consent goes both ways, and they have a responsibility to listen and honor others' boundaries. When they get a little bit older, This will include talking about how sexism and misogyny and patriarchy have a lot to do with consent, because this, you know, there's a lot of harmful myths and misconceptions around there. Like this idea that men always want sex and they're expected to push the boundaries of how far they can go with partners, which makes women the gatekeeper. Like the woman is responsible for pacing or stopping sexual acts. This idea that women should obey men, right? Like that's really harmful for boundaries. Also, like, it isn't manly or romantic to ask before kissing a woman or making a move sexually. And some of this might be new territory for you, right? These are not conversations my parents had with me at all. So I'm still learning as we go as well. But learning how to have these open and honest conversations frequently can really help promote that respect and consent. Okay, then number 8, advocate for gender inclusive education. So support educational initiatives that promote gender equality and inclusivity in schools. This is really important now because there are so many conservative parent groups out there who are actively trying to shut down conversations about gender in school. So encourage your schools to incorporate feminist perspectives into the curriculum. You know, teach about the historical contributions of women and challenge these gender stereotypes in classroom discussions and activities. Maybe for your older kids, you can advocate for inclusive sex education that addresses topics like consent, healthy relationships, and LGBTQ identities. Okay, and number 9, lead by example. So this is similar to what we talked about as the very first, modeling healthy communication and everything at home. You know, perhaps most importantly, you are leading by example. So model these feminist values and behaviors in your own life, right? We talked about modeling equity at home, but model them out in the world. Show your sons what it means to be an ally to women and marginalized genders by actively supporting gender equity initiatives, actively advocating for women's rights, challenging sexism and discrimination when you encounter it. Your actions speak louder than words, and by living your values, you demonstrate to your sons what it means to be a true feminist ally. Okay, so as we wrap this up, basically just remember, raising boys in a patriarchal society requires intentional efforts that go beyond challenging traditional gender roles and stereotypes. I've listed a few here, but what do you all think? These are some ideas that I've had, but I would love to hear other Rebel Mothers' experiences and insights. How are you all raising your sons to survive and thrive while also dismantling patriarchy? And something to remember, motherhood and social justice are lifelong practices. You will likely screw up over and over again, but you always have the opportunity to learn more and do better at both. And the more we recognize that, the more opportunities we have to build resilience, develop tools, and find community support to help us in raising boys in a patriarchal society. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Stay tuned for more empowering stories and insightful discussions in future episodes of Rebel Mothers. Remember to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast to spread the message far and wide. Learn more at susiefishleader.com. And thank you for being part of the motherhood revolution.